Healthcare Today is produced and paid for it by the Radio Vermont Group. We welcome listener feedback. Email your comments to wdev@radiovermont.com.
Healthcare Today with Dr. Lewis Myers, a weekly exploration of health and wellness topics affecting Vermonters. Brought to you in part by Westview Meadows and the Gary Residence, retirement living the way it's meant to be. Age Well Vermont, the leading experts and advocates for older adults in northwestern Vermont. Northfield Pharmacy, pharmacy care with a personalized hometown touch. Northfieldpharmacy.com. And Kinney Drugs and KinneyDrugs.com, employee owned and locally committed. Your participation is encouraged. Call with your questions, 244-1777 or 877-291-8255.
Good afternoon and welcome to Healthcare Today. I'm Dr. Lewis Myers. As regular listeners of this program know, we often try to focus on various healthcare professionals around our state who are providing much-needed medical care. Today we will be looking at the physician assistants and the nurse practitioners and talking with Ms. Michelle Wade, who is the current president of the Nurse Practitioners Association, and Ms. Christine O'Neill, the immediate past president of the Academy of Physician Assistants. Nurse practitioners and physician assistants historically have been labeled as mid-level healthcare providers and are filling important roles in primary care, surgeries, and specialist practices. There have been some important modifications in recent years to their scope of practice. We're going to talk about that, what the future holds, and much more. With our guests today, I want to welcome them, and I also want to open the phones to your comments and questions at 802-244-1777 or text us at 802-585-3026. So I want to welcome Ms. O'Neill and Ms. Michelle Wade. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Ms. O'Neill, let me start with you. You are graduated from the Yale University PA Physician Assistant Program, I believe, in 2002. You have a master's degree in medical science. You've done extensive teaching and coaching and are currently working in both emergency medicine and surgery. I wondered if you could begin by sort of telling us the origin story, if you will, of the physician assistant profession. How did it get started and when?
Thank you. Yeah, so it was actually started in the mid-60s when there was a recognition that there was a shortage of primary care physicians in the United States. And there was a physician named Dr. Eugene Stead, who was practicing at the Duke University Medical Center, who put together the first class of PAs in 1965 by selecting four Navy hospital corpsmen who had received considerable medical training during their military service. And he based the curriculum of the PA program at that time on his knowledge of the fast-track training of doctors during World War II. So it really was born out of the military originally and has grown from there.
These were mostly Vietnam vets, I believe, medics, correct?
That's correct.
So how did it tell us how it then developed and grew?
Well, you know, along with nurse practitioners, PAs have really grown, the profession has grown, the number of training programs has grown to meet the need over the years. And so whereas initially the first PAs who graduated were more, you know, sort of high acuity care that they were providing, sort of, you know, what a combat medic would do, so more emergency and urgent care and surgical assistance. And it really grew, the scope of the PA grew to include all medical and surgical specialties and subspecialties over the years, to the point where now you'll find PAs working across the healthcare system, across the lifespan, from neonatology all the way to geriatrics, and everywhere from primary care offices in rural or urban settings to hospitals to the prison system. And there are even PAs working in the White House taking care of the president and first family.
As I said at the beginning, they are filling much need around the country. Can you tell us a little bit about what the education process is for someone who wants to become a physician assistant and what the subsequent, any post-educational training involves?
Yeah. So physician assistant training is at the master's level. So while there are a handful of BS/MS programs where someone can go in right from high school and do an extended 6+ year program, most PA students have already graduated from college and have a BA or a BS degree, and the majority have a fair amount of healthcare experience. In fact, the average incoming PA student has over 3,000 hours of direct patient experience in roles such as paramedic, medical assistant, and such. PAs are required to complete the basic pre-medical curriculum that physicians would, because PA training is actually modeled on physician training. So it is an abbreviated form of medical school, actually. And often PAs are taking classes alongside medical students and performing clinical rotations alongside them. The PA education on average is 27 continuous months, and that is equivalent to 3 academic years because most PA programs don't offer time off. They're in-person programs, and they are full-time. And PAs receive over 1,000 hours of classroom education in the basic and clinical sciences and then go on to perform over 2,000 hours of supervised clinical rotations across all disciplines, from emergency medicine to surgery, pediatrics, family medicine, psychiatry, and beyond.
Along with the pre-medical courses that someone would have to take to before they apply, is there any other entry exams?
You know, some programs do require the GRE, the graduate record examination, and there is actually a PA examination, a pre-PA examination that's being developed, but it's not consistent for all programs. No.
And you did mention that the number of PA programs has expanded across the country. How many certified licensed PA programs are there in the United States now?
Yeah, right now there are 254 accredited programs in the U.S.
How many were there, you think, 10 years ago?
Probably around 150 would be my guess.
So it's almost, not quite doubled, but almost. Does Vermont have a physician assistant program?
It does not. It is one of only 2 states in the nation that has never had a PA program.
Why is that?
Well, we often ask ourselves that, and there's a lot of interest in starting a program here because there are a lot of Vermonters who become PAs and who would like to be able to train in their home state and currently have to go out of state, such as I did when I received my PA education. You know, one of the biggest problems is that, and this is a problem for medical education of all clinician types, is clinical rotation availability. So we have a lot of learners in the United States between medical students, advanced practice nursing students, PA students. There are really not enough clinical sites for the number of learners that we have, and that has been a rate limiting factor. And just from my own personal experience in medical education here in the state of Vermont, that appears to be one of the biggest issues.
Well, thank you. Stay with us. We're going to be coming back with lots more questions, but I want to talk with Ms. Wade now for a minute. Ms. Michelle Wade got her bachelor's in nursing at the University of Phoenix. She got a master's in science at nursing at the University of Phoenix and postmaster's certification in geriatric primary care from Felician University, and I believe she was also at the University of Pennsylvania. She currently works as a lead for the hospitalist team at Gifford Hospital here in Vermont. And she is the current president of the Vermont Nurse Practitioner Association. Ms. Wade, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Let me ask you the same basic question I asked Ms. O'Neill, sort of the origin story of the nurse practitioner profession, when it started and how it started.
I don't think I can do it quite as eloquently, but it had a similar background. Dr. Loretta Ford, who was a nurse back in 1965, was actually the brainstorm behind the nurse practitioner role, and she was working with Dr. Henry Silver out at the University of Colorado, and they realized that there was a need for the underprivileged, underserved group of folks to get access to care where they couldn't get it, much like we have today in rural areas. and the brainstorm of nurse practitioner was theirs, Dr. Ford's and Dr. Silver's, and they developed the curriculum and then more or less incorporated that curriculum into a full program for nurse practitioners, and then people who graduated from that program realized the benefit it was to communities, and it actually worked its way across the United States to multiple schools over the course of the next 15 years, where it developed much larger followings and the numbers began to grow. By 1973, there were 65 NP programs in the United States, and it continued subsequently to grow after that. By the early 80s, there were only approximately 15,000 NPs licensed, and that's when they was a real understanding that guidelines for family nurse practitioners and pediatric nurse practitioners, which is where the profession started, needed to become more universal. So steering committee was developed, and the American Academy of Nurse Practitioners was established in 1985 and more or less centralized the education and helped upcoming schools develop programs. And by the early or late 80s, there were greater than 100 programs at that point. And then we've continued to grow subsequently to the point we are now, where we most recently, last year, the numbers were there were 290,000 nurse practitioners across the United States. More locally here in Vermont, we actually have finally surpassed the 1,300 number as of September of 2020. And of those 1,300, about 750 of them are domiciled here in Vermont. So they're actually here working in Vermont, we believe, and they are taking care of patients in a broad population from inpatient setting, outpatient setting, geriatric setting, surgical setting, across the spectrum.
Let me ask you, as I did, Ms. O'Neill, can you tell us if someone wanted to go become a nurse practitioner, what is the pathway and what is the education like?
Sure, that's a great question. So nurse practitioners are nurses first, so we follow the nursing pathway. So all nurse practitioners are registered nurses, and that can either be a 2 or a 4-year program at an associate degree level or a baccalaureate level, and then continue on your education if you so choose to become a nurse practitioner. And what that looks like is an additional approximately 4 years of education, where a nurse practitioner finishes out a master's degree and then either chooses to continue on to a terminal degree, which is the Doctor of Nursing Practice, or can step out with a post-master's certification like I did. The difference a little bit between PAs and NPs is that PAs, and please, Ms. O'Neill, correct me if I'm wrong, but they're basically broadly trained on the medical curriculum, whereas nurse practitioners were foci specific. So that's why I have 2 post-master's degrees. I have one in adult family primary care, and I also have one in adult gerontology acute care. And so because I work in a hospital, I am acute care certified, and when I was doing primary care, I was certified in that foci. So basically for us, it's 500 additional hours for each foci. So say I wanted to go back and do mental health, then I would go back through another year to year and a half long program and get an additional 500 clinical hours supervised in that focus.
So one of the differences, perhaps just in terms of the actual training programs, is my understanding is the physician assistant programs tend to be on-site, hands-on, whereas I do believe there are a number of nurse practitioner programs and certification programs that are primarily online. And I'll open that up to you, both of you. Does that sound true or not?
That is, I believe, accurate from the nurse practitioner side. We do have 2 programs here in the state of Vermont that are brick and mortar, traditional programs, and there are numerous online programs. And part of that, as I think Ms. O'Neill alluded to, is that clinical placement is extremely difficult. And oftentimes, in order for a nurse practitioner to be able to find clinical placement, they have to travel across state lines. And so being in an online program would allow me to go to New York or New Hampshire to get my clinical hours if I needed to.
What kind of courses do you take online as opposed to sitting in a classroom?
So the didactic portion of the course that you would normally talk with the professor face-to-face is often done in an online, either synchronous or asynchronous format. So some of it is actually live and you're in Zoom like we've all become accustomed to now. And some of it is online asynchronous where you do it when it fits your schedule. And you either are doing a fair amount of interacting on a discussion board. Sometimes you watch a presentation that a professor has and you need to respond to it. And, of course, we get to write tons of papers.
The couple of other additional questions. And, Ms. O'Neill, I'll turn back to you. The who supervises or oversees physician assistants in terms of regulation or any complaints about malpractice, et cetera?
Great question. So, as you know, the practice of medicine is very complex, and there are lots of oversight bodies. So PAs, like physicians and NPs, must have a state license in order to practice. And so the state does, in the state of Vermont, the Board of Medical Practice, which also regulates physicians and podiatrists, is the regulatory board for PAs.
So if there was a complaint about a physician assistant, it would go before the Board of Medical Practice?
That's correct.
And in Ms. Wade, for NPs, who oversees and regulates the nursing practitioners?
Great question. Again, we are on a nursing model, and we are regulated in Vermont by the Board of Nursing through the Office of Professional Regulation.
In terms of board certification, when you finish a program, I know in medicine, of course, we have to take the boards or a series of boards and then recertify. For the PAs and the NPs, where does that stand in terms of board certification? What are the requirements?
This is Christine. I can start. So all PAs must take a certification exam upon graduation and before they can practice in the United States. And there's a single examination that's administered by the National Commission on Certification of Physician Assistants. That examination is repeated every 10 years in order for a PA to remain in practice. And PAs must complete, in the state of Vermont, 100 hours of continuing medical education every 2 years in order to remain licensed.
I should point out that's actually more CME, continuing medical education hours, than physicians.
Yeah.
What about the nurse practitioners for board certification or recertification?
Yep. So for board certification across the country, in order for us to be able to bill, we need to be board certified. New York is the only state in the United States that allows nurse practitioners to not be board certified, but they cannot bill as independent practitioners unless they're certified. There are several certifying bodies for the nurse practitioners because, again, we're foci driven, but everyone pretty much does take boards unless they happen to be working in a practice where they're not going to bill. And you do need to through CME and accreditation or by option of testing every 5 years, we either recertify through CME or by reboarding. And we are required in Vermont to maintain a board certification. We are required by certifying bodies. One of my bodies requires 180 hours every 5 years. My other one is 290 every 5 years. And it includes certain areas, including narcotics, including other type of things, depending on your focus, that you must do CME in.
And finally, what about malpractice insurance? Is it tantamount or equal to what a physician would pay, or is it structured in other ways?
This is Christine. I can answer that. In addition to my role as a practicing clinician, from 2016 to 2019, I served as the director of advanced practice providers at the University of Vermont Medical Center. So I have some inside knowledge about how this works. Certainly all clinicians who are practicing medicine should, and for institutional reasons, if they're employed by a hospital or other facility, must have malpractice insurance. The structure of it varies based on the employer. So for some PAs who are practicing in private practice, they are purchasing their own malpractice insurance. For those who are employed by hospitals
FQHCs or, you know, large group practices. Typically that's provided by the employer, and it would, of course, cover any action against the PA. So it while the bureaucracy around, you know, the exact policy type differs between physicians and other clinician types, PAs are certainly
covered. What about the amount? Does a PA get charged less for their malpractice than a physician?
Again, there's no one answer to that. So what you see these days outside of states with tort reform is that anyone involved in patient care is going to be named in a lawsuit, and things are sort of taken care of that way, sort of beyond mm-hmm. the scope, I think, of our conversation today. But mm-hmm. The idea being that a payout would certainly not necessarily be lower because a PA rendered the care.
Ms. Wade, is it much the same situation with nurse practitioners?
Exactly the same.
Okay. So they are required to have malpractice, and it generally the if someone was injured or felt that there was a malpractice, they could certainly seek redress from the either NPs or PAs.
Absolutely.
Yes. So we're going to have a break in a few minutes, and we're going to have a lot more to talk about, but I do want to talk about the independence, the growing independence in practice for physician assistants and nurse practitioners, because I think there has been a change in the scope of practice as they have gained more confidence and more experience in their field. And I'd like to hear from each of you. Ms. O'Neill, I guess we could start with you, and if we have to take a break, we'll come back and continue. Where do things stand for physician assistants now in Vermont in terms of their scope of practice?
So scope of practice really hasn't changed significantly over the last 10 to 15 years in the state of Vermont. As Ms. Wade pointed out earlier, all PAs are trained as generalists and exposed to the major medical and surgical specialties and subspecialties, during their training. And what that means is that upon graduation, we are able to practice really in any clinical setting. And the way that that works is the same as it would for a physician or other clinician type. If a PA gets hired into, say, a cardiology practice, they're going to be practicing cardiology, commensurate with their level of education, training, and experience. And so they would not practice outside of the scope of what is provided, the care that's provided in that practice. So you wouldn't have a PA with a side dermatology practice embedded within that cardiology practice. But the scope is broad enough that a PA is very flexible. And for instance, I have worked in multiple clinical settings over my career and have received on the job training and mentorship, and additional education in general surgery, bariatric surgery, emergency medicine, and interventional radiology over the course of my 20-year clinical career. So the scope of practice essentially matches or would not extend beyond that of the physicians practicing within that clinical.
But in terms of the independence, now physician assistants, my understanding, at least until recently, have always needed to be supervised by a physician. And I believe there was a change last year through the legislature. Is that correct?
That is correct. So this varies based on state law. So it is not uniform across the United States, but you're right. In July of 2020, Governor Scott signed Act 123 into law, which changed the relationship between PAs and physicians from a supervisory relationship to a collaborative relationship, which really more accurately reflects what's happening on the ground and how practices are working and how clinicians are working together today. Now, that is simply at the state license level. There are additional requirements that are placed upon the physician-PA relationship by employers and by payers, by insurance companies. So, for instance, while my relationship with physicians is considered collaborative by the Board of Medical Practice, at the University of Vermont Medical Center, it is still considered supervisory, and there are physicians who are ensuring that PAs and every member of the clinical team is meeting standard of care and that there's a quality assurance process in place.
And Ms. Wade, we can start, and as we lead into the break, we'll come back with you. But in terms of scope of practice of nurse practitioners, that's changed quite a bit, hasn't it?
It has over the years, and Vermont is one of the full practice authority states, indicating that we have full authority to practice to the extent of our scope of licensure. And so what that is in Vermont, we can bill independently. We have our own NPI number, and we could hang our own shingle if we so choose, and have our own independent practice, whereas in neighboring New York, they can't do that. Nurse practitioners require a collaborative supervisory agreement in some states. For us, there is absolutely some continued regulation in the sense that there is a what we call transition to practice. So if I were to graduate tomorrow, I would need to be in my focus of practice for 2 years and have greater than 2,500 or 2,400 hours.
I'm going to have to stop you. We are going to come back and talk about this and much more. Give us a call at 802-244-1777. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. Welcome back to Healthcare Today, second half of our show today. We're talking to two wonderful guests, Ms. Michelle Wade of the Nurse Practitioner Association and Ms. Christine O'Neill of the Physician Assistant Associations. What we've heard so far is that both physician assistant and nurse practitioner professions began essentially in the mid-1960s in response to what was perceived as a need for particularly increased primary care providers. Both of those professions have grown significantly over the years in terms of the number of schools and students. The nurse practitioner program, they both spend about the same amount of time in their classroom training. Nurse practitioners tend to perhaps do a little bit more online, where the PAs are more in-person training. They both get approximately the same amount of post-educational clinical training, although as I believe Ms. O'Neill pointed out, it's tough sometimes to find good clinical rotations. The nurse practitioners are basically taught through the nursing profession and are overseen by a nursing board, and the physician assistants have historically been more aligned with the medical profession and have been taught in what's called the medical model. There have been some new scope of practice changes for both the PAs and NPs. So, Ms. Wade, let me return to you. As you mentioned, there are in Vermont now, a nurse practitioner who satisfies the requirements can actually hang out his or her shingle and essentially practice independently. Is that correct?
That is correct. They need to meet a transition to practice prior to that with either a physician colleague or a nurse practitioner colleague who has already met that transition to practice period, but then they can be completely independent after that time. But that being said, I want to emphasize that none of us in medicine, I think, work completely independently. We always rely on colleagues.
That's absolutely true. But let me ask you this. I mean, this is maybe a bit controversial question, but I think it needs to be asked. What is the difference between a physician assistant and a nurse practitioner that warrants the nurse practitioner being allowed to practice independently, but at this point the physician assistant not being allowed to do so?
I'll take a shot at it. This is Michelle. I think that we have supported, we the Vermont Nurse Practitioners Association has supported the recent legislature to have the NPs and our PAs in Vermont practice independently. I'm not clear that there is an actual difference in what a PA is able to do versus what an NP is able to do. I think that the scope, and Ms. O'Neill can probably answer better, is a little bit antiquated and needed to come forward, and that's why that legislature came out. I feel PAs practice side by side with me here at Gifford Medical Center in a very independent role with some supervision available to them, just like the NPs do, and I think they are very well qualified to do that.
Consequences, though, of this difference is that there are a number of jobs that PAs actually are not even allowed to apply for, because without It may change, I suppose, with the new collaborative agreement. We can hope it will. But certainly there have been jobs that if there was not a physician right on site, that PAs were not allowed to apply for. And that's, I know from talking to a number of PAs, that's been rather difficult for them. So I say it may be changing. What is said in the regulation is that you're allowed to practice up to the extent of your profession, correct?
Yes.
And how does that get defined? How does that ceiling get defined?
So it's defined for nurse practitioners. It's defined very easily. It is the scope that you are trained for. We have multiple certifications, be it either neonatal, pediatric, certified nurse midwife, certified registered nurse anesthetist, primary care, family care, adult care, acute care. So it is within your foci is where you are to be practicing. So I shouldn't go take care of babies. Okay. That would be outside my scope of practice.
And Ms. O'Neill, how is the physician assistant's sort of ceiling of practice determined?
It's determined by, again, sort of the standard of care and the standard of practice within the specialty. So, again, a PA would not practice beyond what a physician in the practice would be doing. In other words, the scope would not extend beyond that. In addition to that, PAs are professionals, as are other clinicians, and it's really drilled into us during our education to practice within our ability and to not hesitate to consult or refer when we have reached a clinical scenario that is outside of what we're comfortable managing by education, training, and experience.
I do know from my own experience that for patients sometimes all of this gets very blurred. They see someone coming in a white coat, and whether they have DNP or NP on or PA, it's very difficult for them to differentiate between the NPs, PAs, and physicians. And I'll ask each of you this, if a patient asked you, Ms. Wade, what is the difference between a physician and an NP, what would you tell them?
I actually get asked that question quite often, and I'm very honest with them. I explain to them in a very short version that we work under the nursing model, that we are advanced practice, advanced trained nurses, and we have achieved certification as a nurse practitioner, and our scope of practice is very similar to the physicians that we work with. However, we certainly utilize them when needed. If we don't understand what's going on or if we need a second opinion, they are here as our neighbor. We work in a team environment where I work, so often my physician is in the room with me at times, but often he is not. So I have explained that many times. Mm-hmm. What I have found is that once you explain the difference between a bachelor's prepared nurse, which many people are familiar with in the community, to an advanced practice nurse and compare it to PAs and MDs, all of a sudden they do have some understanding. But I very much agree with you. We do not explain this to the community in general well enough.
Ms. O'Neill, what would you say to a patient that asks what's the difference between a physician assistant and a physician?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with both of you. It is very confusing. And my answer is very similar to Michelle's, by explaining that while physicians have much more formal training than I do, that I'm trained in the same model and that I practice alongside them as a partner. And that certainly they, we are all managing. So I've always worked in an academic medicine setting. So, we all share patients, if you will, and collaborate and discuss patient care amongst ourselves regularly. And if at any point a patient that I'm seeing needs more expertise than I can provide, that I'm either going to connect them with the physician, I'm going to call the physician or reschedule them to see the physician. The big confusion in the PA world is our name is a bit of a misnomer because we don't technically assist the physician. We're working as with graduated autonomy over the course of our career.
What would you like to rename it? That's a very good what would you name it if you had a magic wand right now?
If I had a magic wand, I would rename the profession what actually was originally called, which was physician associate, and that's actually my degree from Yale.
Interestingly, there are, that's another group that is now practicing increasingly in this country called physician associates. These are medical graduates of medical school who have not been able to find American residency and up in the air, and they are being allowed to practice basically as physicians, but not, I'm still a little confused about what their role is, but they are yet another group. We don't have a physician here. I'll answer perhaps what some physicians might say if they were in this situation, is that the training of a physician is similar in many ways, particularly to the PA profession, but a PA who graduates from a good program is still coming out basically with the knowledge and experience of someone who's finished third year medical school. The physician is going to go on not only the fourth year medical school, but then 3 years of very intensive residency training to become primary care. That usually is anywhere from 10 to 12,000 hours. If they want to become a specialist, it's another year or two after that. If they want to become a surgeon, it's anywhere from 5 to 8 years. So, young people are asking me now in the hospital where I work, who are doing their sort of preclinical hours, especially if they're interested in primary care, is it worthwhile to go to medical school to come out $200,000 in debt and to have completed really 7 or 8 years of training and then have someone who has completed 2 years of training, perhaps in the case of a PA or maybe slightly more from an NP, doing much the same work? It's hard to know what to tell them this today. I know what I would have told them 10 or 15 years ago. I would have said, by all means, if you have the energy and interest, go to medical school. And I still think that's true to a large extent. But now there are some real questions out there.
I think that's such a great point. And as I said, we as PAs, we always acknowledge that physicians have far more formal medical training than we do. We need physicians. PAs, NPs, and physicians are all necessary. And I think the point is that we should all be practicing at the top of our scope so that we are able to provide the right care to the right patient at the right time in the right location. And that requires that we have the right number of physicians in order to provide that level of expertise. But I think that your point, it also leads to the question I think that we have to ask, which is, do we really, what do we want physicians to be expending their time and expertise and energy on, and what is better served by other clinicians? And, I think we're seeing some interesting new models of care delivery that are reflecting this, so that a lot, which is not to say that PAs and advanced practice nurses cannot practice at a very high specialty level. Certainly, the more years of experience we have, we are extremely expert in our discipline.
No, and I work with some fantastic physician assistants and nurse practitioners. I think that where the real difference comes is early on. I think a physician who's completed American residency is really better prepared to hit the ground running. I think their learning curve is much steeper for a new NP and PA or PA. I think 10 or 15 years down the line, if they've been industrious, worked hard, and kept learning, that that narrows quite considerably. I would add that this is not the only profession that is seeing these kind of questions. Dentistry, we now see dental hygienists pushing to do dental extractions and other simple, quote-unquote, simple dental procedures. Ophthalmology care, optometrists have long pushed for more scope of practice. Paralegals are trying to become more independent. And even in certain states, psychologists are pushing to be able to prescribe medications, which can affect in every organ system. So this is not the only area where these questions are being asked. I do want to get to our caller, if they're still on the line. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, please.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to chime in. This is a very interesting conversation. About 3 years ago, my physician retired in the Central Vermont area. It seems as though a lot of the physicians have retired in the Central Vermont area, and it's really tough to find a good one. And the PA at the time that was working with the physician, I had dealt with a couple times when he had gone away on vacation. And I just wanted those folks who are out there, I was the person who was saying what was the difference between a PA and a physician. And to be honest with you, after my physician retired, I decided to stay on with my PA. So I do not have a actual physician right now that I deal with. I'm at the practice, but I deal with this particular physician's assistant. And I just want to say for those folks out there, I received the most wonderful care from this woman. I think she is fantastic. Her level of expertise is great. I feel extremely comfortable with her, as comfortable as I did when I had my other physician. He was fantastic, but it was a pretty seamless transition. And for those folks out there who may or may not be concerned about, you know, seeing a PA versus seeing a full-fledged physician, I would tell you that most of these people have, you know, such a high level of expertise.
Jeff, I'm going to stop you there because we want to get back to our calls, but thank you.
Sure.
And I think that that would be echoed by many, many Vermonters out there, and I appreciate you calling with those thoughts. Miss Wade, let me ask you, your CV says you are the lead for the hospitalist team at Gifford Hospital. Tell us about the team and your role at Gifford.
Sure. So our team is made up of two physicians and four associate providers. We have three nurse practitioners and one physician assistant on our team, and we take care of all of the inpatient adult patients at Gifford Medical Center. So we normally have one physician and one either NP or PA on at the same time. We divide the unit in half, basically, and we each carry half of the unit. And we do collaborative multidisciplinary rounds every morning. And so everybody knows everything about all of the patients. And then our PAs and NPs at night, we cover the entire unit, as well as we all admit our own patients, carry them through their stay, and then discharge them when the time is right. So we do full comprehensive care. In my lead role, I'm more or less the division lead, and so I also coordinate with all the other departments in the hospital for any changes or policy or things along those lines.
Is that unusual for an NP to be the lead hospitalist?
I think it's up and coming, but I do think it is a little bit unusual.
Okay. Ms. O'Neill, you are now at the University of Vermont right now?
I work per diem in the emergency department there, yes.
So tell us what you do in the emergency department.
Well, actually, it's a little different. I was hired back in March to help with pandemic surge response. Mm. I was hired to help take care of the anticipated influx of COVID patients. I've gone back to a little bit of general ER care, but to be honest, they really haven't fortunately needed me because they've had adequate staffing. So, but what you'll see in that emergency department is that there are, I believe, 30 clinicians. There are 15 PAs, and the rest are MDs and DOs. And while the PAs in that emergency department setting, because it is a teaching hospital, do tend to take care of the less acute patients, they're still managing with a high degree of autonomy and expert care, managing anything that might come through the door. So whether it's a psychiatric concern, a pediatric concern, an adult patient, the PA is at least initially evaluating the patient, and then possibly, if it's a more complicated patient, co-managing with a physician. Although I will add that that is a function of the fact that it is an academic medical center, and in hospitals around the other hospitals around the state of Vermont, PAs are taking care of anything that's coming through the door.
And they certainly are at my hospital as well.
Yeah. Here at Gifford, we have a single provider ED, and we have NPs, PAs, and MDs that run our ED.
Yeah.
So in the PA profession, I know there's some talk, particularly for surgeries or some of the specialties, of having a one-year postgraduate program. For example, those who might want to work in ICUs as well. Do you see that as the future for PAs?
You know, I have to say I do. There have been postgraduate fellowships and residencies for PAs for years, and the majority of PAs do not enroll in those, but it's always an option, and it is possible to get an additional certification of qualification in certain specialties.
What I have seen is, especially as an administrator, is that to your earlier point, you know, a freshly minted PA or NP certainly is on a steep learning curve. You know, I might also add, having been involved in physician education for years, that a newly minted intern is also fairly wide-eyed moving into internship, and even the transition to becoming an attending brings with it a new set of concerns and responsibilities. So, you know, I think the entire team is always working to develop proficiency and competency as they move through their career. I do think, and this is my opinion only, that it can be useful in terms of creating, to create a more structured clinical onboarding experience for especially a more junior PA to go through sort of a more, you know, more like an early residency or fellowship experience. I do think that that will help to bring the new grad PA up to speed a little faster. Do I think it's going to be a requirement? I'm not sure if the profession
is
going to go.
Let me ask you this, and this might be a little bit of a controversial question. We only have a couple minutes left, but particularly for the PAs who are taught in the medical model, if you had a physician assistant who had been practicing for 5, 7, maybe even 10 years, would you ever see a role for them then sitting the boards, the medical boards, and perhaps some other evaluations by physicians and sort of becoming a physician through that pathway? You know, in law, they used to read for the law in the old days rather than go to law school. But as I've said, often the difference between a PA who's been practicing steadily for 10 years and a physician is not that great, at least in primary care. I can't necessarily say that for the surgery.
Sure.
But do you see a pathway for that?
It's a very interesting question. I think it's a timely question. And parenthetically, in the state of Vermont, one can still read for the law.
Mm-hmm.
One does not need to.
You're right, actually, about that. One of the only states, I think, in the country.
Yes. Our mighty little state.
Yeah.
I think that again, this is my opinion. I think that it would make good sense, given the shortages of graduating physicians in some specialties, especially primary care, for there to be a pathway for a PA to become a physician. My own bias would be that there would be formal, structured, credentialed additional training that would need to be performed before the PA could sit for the boards and then try to match for a residency. But I do think that that would make a lot of sense.
Well, there are a lot of interesting things ahead, but I want to just reemphasize as we close that nurse practitioners and physician assistants, perhaps someday physician associates, are providing critical services to the state of Vermont. We're glad to have them here. I'm glad to have Ms. Michelle Wade, who represents the Nurse Practitioner Association, and Ms. O'Neill, who represents the PAs. Please join us next week. We're going to be talking about sports injuries with sports orthopedist Dr. Matthew Gammons. In the meantime, be kind to yourselves, be kind to others.
Today with Dr. Lewis Myers, brought to you in part by Age Well Vermont, the leading experts and advocates for older adults in northwestern Vermont, Westview Meadows and the Gary Residence, retirement living the way it's meant to be, Kinney Drugs and KinneyDrugs.com, employee-owned and locally committed, Northfield Pharmacy, pharmacy care with a personalized hometown touch, NorthfieldPharmacy.com.
The music for this program was written and produced by Armin Bayajian.